Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, April 4th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Lamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, all good over here. All good.
Excellent. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, Charlotte.
Hey.
All right. Now, John, actually, I would like to start with you on this link that you posted yesterday talking about all different kinds of technology learning, I guess, for lack of a better word. Can you take us through this a little bit? We're going to ask you some questions about all of these different methods.
I hope I can answer.
Lots of questions.
We hear a lot about artificial intelligence and machine learning, especially from Apple, about applications inside the iPhone to assist you with your daily processes. AI has two elements to it. One is the umbrella terminology, and amongst experts, as I take it, there's layers of AI technology. So the first layer is AI itself, which has to do with processes and rules. And the second level is machine learning, where you develop analytics and look for patterns within the data. And that's helpful for user processes, where the phone can detect that whenever in your location X, you do operation Y. And then deep learning involves extension to external analytics. And there was a great example published at Tech Republic the other day that put it in context for business people, because business people need to understand how the adoption of AI is going to affect their business. Mm-hmm. And so they gave an example of traffic planning. And I really liked it because it helped you put all these different mysterious concepts into sort of a visual mode of understanding in a simple kind of way. So the first example they gave was traffic planning. Mm-hmm. And so in the first process, you develop rules to go out and develop information about traffic congestion, accessing data about the traffic and using rules to gather the information that you need. So this has to do with congestion and road repairs and infrastructure changes. And so you develop an AI to help you gather the information according to certain rules. And then the step two in the process is looking for patterns. Like, why is it most congested in this location? Is it a Starbucks nearby? Is it because of rush hour? Could we tie it to the time? So the machine is trying to learn information about the data that it's collected from the rules that you gave it. And then the third level is deep learning, where you apply external analytics. You're trying to figure out how the small picture fits into the big picture with external algorithms, like do weather patterns play into whether there's traffic congestions? What are the external factors? So that has to do with predicting. Mm-hmm. So these are the three layers of AI. And as a nice example in the article I wrote, linking to the Tech Republic article, that kind of helps you put a mental picture behind these processes. Now, another good example would be chess. There's rules for chess, and you can write software that understands those rules. Mm-hmm. But the chess program might notice that every time you castle, the next thing you do is you move a bishop. And so it can predict what's going on. And then deep learning might say, well, we're going to apply some external analytics. What day of the week was it? What did he have for breakfast? Mm-hmm. Did he have an argument with his kids? Is he annoyed?
When it's raining, there's different stuff.
Does he have a cup of coffee in his hand? Is he hyper?
Okay.
So deep learning takes it to the next level of external analytics, trying to solve a problem.
So I have the first stupid question.
Sure. There are no stupid questions, only stupid answers, which I will provide.
So most of this stuff sounds brilliant, and I totally get the kind of traffic examples you're talking about, or I know there's lots of research going into AI and further deep learning and so on, as you've explained it, in the health sector, for example. But I'm also wondering if there is a risk of a kind of false equivalence, whereby we end up linking things and finding a correlation for things where there isn't actually one. The data correlates, but actually there is no real effect. But we're so taken in by the data and the AI and the learning that actually we sort of follow things that we make patterns where there aren't any. If you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. One of the topics I've written about.
Wow.
Understanding. Let me put it another way. We need to have an understanding of the thought processes that the AI is undergoing. The neural networks can become very complicated and difficult, and it's hard enough to write the code to actually solve a problem. But then when you want to interrogate the AI and ask it why it came to that conclusion, that's a very difficult process. Inserting code into the code that helps the human understand the reasoning process of AI is a huge challenge, and it's not, so far as I know, being done very well right now. It's probably the state of the art of research. So if an AI says, I've examined the medical data, I would say Watson, for example, in IBM, and I discovered that a certain kind of treatment for this cancer works in 90% of the cases, you could go off and try that, and it might be a mistake, or Watson might have misunderstood something, and you kill people. So you have to sit down with Watson and say, okay, walk me through the process of how you came to the conclusion from the medical research that this kind of medicine will cure this kind of cancer. And Watson then goes into a discourse with you and starts explaining, well, I've read this data and this is how I analyzed it, and I put it through this statistical program, and these results were proven in a test program at Princeton in a trial, and so on. And so you start to get confidence in the thinking process of the AI. You're right, exactly. We're at the point now where we're all too ready to take the advice of AIs and take their output literally and say, well, it's a machine, it's a program. But there's been some research on this, as I recall. People are willing to take the advice of a computer program because they're too trusting. They think the programmers are infallible or the algorithms are infallible. So that is a danger.
Right.
And this is the same. Go ahead, Charlotte.
No, it just kind of struck me as, we all like to look for patterns of things. We do this as reporters and writers, even when you're trying to tell a story. But actually, sometimes you can put two and two together and get a five. And as advanced as this technology is, I guess there is a risk that the technology does that too. Because after all, it's humans that are building the technology.
Well, the positive side of the situation is that because people are trusting in computers, if we can develop systems that sort of puncture our balloons of myth and misunderstandings, maybe we can have a clearer picture about how to solve a problem. I was watching the news the other night, and they were talking about putting rent controls on apartments because the prices were going out of sight. Mm-hmm. And this guy came on and he said, the solution to the apartment problem is not rent controls, because that just creates scarcity. The solution is to build more apartments. And every once in a while, we run across somebody who has such a deep level of understanding, some scientist or some writer, where they just all of a sudden puncture the argument with just crystal clear logic that we go, oh yeah, I was thinking about that wrong. And so maybe more AIs in our society can help us. There's the downside and a danger, but maybe it can also help us clarify our thinking about medicine and climate and other problems that face us.
Mm-hmm. Now, for people who may not be aware, a lot of folks, if you have an iPhone, and you talk to your iPhone, and the lady in your iPhone gives you some sort of information, you're already using this in a fashion. And if you have a phone without a home button that's unlocking with your face, you're also using another kind of piece. So Like, when I think about, like, the Siri watch face, part of that is something that falls in this category. I think it's machine learning. Because it knows, you know, like, the example they gave was, every morning you order this thing from that coffee shop. So, do you want to do that? And then it starts letting you know, like, now is normally when you order this, do you want to do that?
Machine learning is more like adaptive behavior, whereas AI is execution of rules. That's another interesting point, so that we implement facial recognition according to algorithms that we've developed on points of the face and mm-hmm. how they vary from person to person. But how that relates to how our brain recognizes human faces. There is a subset of our brain that allows us to recognize faces, and it's developed at a very early age. Mm-hmm. And the brain may be doing an algorithm that's completely different than the one we implement in Face ID.
Right.
And so we can expect that artificial intelligence agents will have reasoning processes that could appear to be very alien to us, but maybe give the same result, or maybe give a startlingly different result.
Well, it depends on what they're for. Like, the reason, if I had one, the reason my phone with Face ID wants my face is this my phone? Am I the person who's allowed to unlock it? And that's a very different thing than when I look at a person and go, that's Charlotte, that's John, that's Brian, so that I can talk to them about the right thing, right?
Yeah, it's probably a completely different algorithmic process, different software, different function.
Well, what I want out of it is very different from what my phone wants out of it. I'm trying to get to.
I'm sort of tongue-tied for a second here. What you want out of it is understanding that this is Charlotte you're talking to. And what the phone wants out of it is that this person's authenticated. Is that what you're driving at?
Yeah. Nothing that I'm doing is necessarily a security feature. But if I have a conversation with... if I try to have the conversation with you, John, that I would normally have with Charlotte, things might get weird.
Well, I think that's a...
they would definitely get weird.
Processes are more similar than you may suggest. For example, if you got a video phone call from your mom... say a FaceTime call from your mom, mm-hmm. you would look at your mom's face and say, well, this is really my mom, not some imposter from Belgium trying to trick me into buying something. So you're authenticating your mom through facial recognition before you talk to her.
Okay, I see what you're saying. But I'm just talking about, like, as far as the phone is concerned, it's binary, either unlock or don't, based on the face that it's finding. And
this is either George Clooney or it isn't.
Exactly. And again, very different conversation.
Charlotte, do you have another question?
No, I mean, I'm just trying to... the thing that I'm trying to get my head around as you're explaining this is when we as mere mortals are going to really see the benefits of it. Now, some of it we do. We know that there are various elements that AI is impacting, but actually it hasn't really broken into the mainstream in the way it could, because the technology is about, yes, Watson is quite a prominent tool, but actually when are we really going to start seeing this, and in what kind of context, do you think?
Well, I think Amazon is already using it.
Amazon was the example I was thinking of for kind of how we do see it.
Yeah, if they know that I order dishwashing powder that I can't get in my local store every 6 months, the computer may come up with the idea that maybe they should move some of the dishwashing powder to a local warehouse instead of shipping in long distance.
Right.
Something like that.
And we know that some of the social networks moderate by using AI as well.
Yeah, we don't always see the effects of it. We just sort of take it for granted as part and parcel of our intercourse with society. But it's underlying a lot of things.
Yeah. So the thing I will point out is, like I was saying, in a practical application, some people listening are already using some of this. If you use the Siri watch face, some of that is machine learning, some of it's AI. And if you ever ask your phone for information and she talks back to you, or he talks back to you and tells you something, that's also a certain amount of AI and a certain amount of machine learning that's happening on your behalf. So you may be a little closer to this than you think.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite TV shows is about what happens when all of this goes wrong and inevitably turns on you. So
one of the problems with AI is understanding the context of the question and the situation. Right. And that means collecting a whole lot of data about you so that it can put things in the context and understand your questions. And that sounds like a creepy process. Like, who are you? Where are you? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. What has happened recently? All these things that the AI needs to understand your question are picked up by social cues in society. Mm-hmm. But the machine doesn't have access to that, and it's got a very limited bandwidth to talk to you through voice. And so that's why it seems so dumb, is because it's lacking cues and other factors that help it come to a decision,
right,
about what it is you really mean when you ask it a question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, John, thanks for that. I'm sure we will hear more about this as it gets more prevalent. More interesting.
Interesting.
Well, right. Whether it's from you or from other source, we will definitely hear more about it. So the other thing I wanted to talk about was you, Charlotte, you took a little field trip.
Well, yes. I mean, I go to the soccer. I have been waiting nearly 2 years to go to the soccer stadium. My football team here in London is Tottenham Hotspur Spurs, and they've been for the best part. Well, it's been a 12-year project, but the real work has happened over the last 2 years to 3 years or so, where they've literally built a new stadium on the site of the old one from the ground up. And what is exciting in our kind of context of this is, firstly, it is the world, I think the world's, certainly the first in the UK and probably in Europe, first cashless stadium. Mm-hmm. So people will not, no vendors, no shops, no way in the stadium will accept cash. You have to, you know, basically use Apple Pay or a contactless card. And also what I discovered last night on going to the stadium is that the new app launched on iOS by the club is also can be used basically as your season ticket, as your match ticket. You can scan the barcode. It's a kind of a QR code, actually, on the ticket that appears on your account on the app, and you just wander in the stadium. So all you really need to go to the stadium is your iPhone, which, given how notoriously slow at developing football is here, given how, you know, that you're talking about a place with 62,000 people. If you've got all those people fiddling around for £10 notes, the process of selling them beer and cups of tea and pies and whatever else slows down quite rapidly. Doing it this way, it's all about efficiency. I mean, I suspect the club get quite useful data on the back of it as well. It's quite an advanced kind of setup to basically declared your whole football stadium completely cashless.
It's also a health factor, too. I remember one time I was in a shop, I won't mention the name, where this woman was handling money. I watched her at the cashier location. She was handling paper money, and then she got a call to deliver a loaf of bread to the drive-up window, and so she went right over and picked up the loaf of bread.
Oh, no.
And so not having to handle money is a really nice health issue. One of the things I worry about, Charlotte, is what happens if you can't afford a phone, or what happens if there's some electronic issue with your account?
And yeah, so
you can't get in and you can't spend money.
Yeah, so you do also get a kind of card season ticket. So that's how most people get into the stadium. I just kind of wanted to test it on the app as a little bit of an experiment. In terms of, yes, look, that's all. This is a perennial problem, isn't it? As more and more things become cashless, actually, there are lots of people who might not want a smartphone, might not have a smartphone, might not want to associate their bank details with their smartphone. There's all sorts of reasons. So obviously you can still use credit and debit cards like normal in a cashless environment like this. But it just seemed, it was just interesting to me that, you know, a top league football club had actually taken the stance of going, actually, we're not having any cash anymore. It's either Apple Pay or a card.
Mm-hmm. And you guys use Tap to Pay, right? You don't even use the, correct. The chip. So if it's under 30 pounds. But, right, you
correct, use under 30 pounds sterling, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully your hot dogs aren't that expensive.
Well, no, if you had a beer, all bets
be
are off.
Surprised, but... No, it was... It sounds silly, but this kind of, it kind of made for a better experience. There's also fun stuff at the stadium, kind of beers that fill from the bottom up, which means, you know, the bar staff can leave them, and there's a brewery in the stadium and all these kind of fun stuff. But
yeah,
there's a craft beer brewery in the stadium. And also, it's interesting because the NFL is going to use the stadium. There's a NFL pitch built underneath it and so on. And so actually you're creating this kind of cashless environment for between Premier League football and the national football, the NFL. You're building a cashless environment for two of the world's biggest sport franchises, which I think is kind of significant that actually, you know, you can go and watch an NFL match at White Hart Lane now, at New Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, it's actually called. And, you know, like I say, just take your iPhone. You can take the picture. You can take your pictures. You can probably get your tickets through on your phone, and you can pay for everything all using the same device. And look, we know this is where it's going, but having it in the stadium is kind of a microcosm of where everything is going, I think.
Yeah.
Well, NFL tickets are so expensive, nobody carries that much cash on them anyway.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's it was... First of all, what was funny was that at some of the earlier events to test the stadium, people still wanted to use cash. People hadn't quite got their head around it. There's still someone that's, you know, ahead of you in the queue trying to buy a beer with a £5 note or whatever. but actually, it seemed to all work pretty nicely. You know, for the launch last night, there's 62,000 people there. And the Wi-Fi, you know, the network seemed to be working. And I think it makes the serving process actually much quicker when you're trying to serve that number of people. And I suspect that more and more venues are going to move to this way.
Oh, probably,
there's
yeah.
increasing fragility in that kind of situation, too. If people just pull out a £5 note and walk in, there's just very little failure mode associated with that. But if the Wi-Fi goes down...
Sure.
Software upgrade takes down the system. The game does not happen because nobody can get in.
Well, the game can happen, just no one has beer, probably.
No, nobody can watch it.
Yeah, all of them are sober. Nobody knows why everything's so quiet now.
Yeah.
But no, it was I thought it was. I just kind of thought it was a. It seemed to me an interesting way of developing these kind of locations, and I expect that will continue.
How do you feel about it? Does it feel, Charlotte, like you're part of the future, that this is exciting and this is a new phase of our lives, or does you feel a sense of dread and that we can't do things the way we
No, I really liked it because it kind of means you have to carry less on you. You don't have to worry about taking any cash out before you get anywhere. I personally think it makes lives a little bit easier.
Cool.
They're doing a whole bunch of construction on the soccer stadium in my city, and I wonder if we're going to end up with a brewery in it too. No, I'm just curious. I wonder if this is the thing that's going to happen. We'll have to find out. And if my football stadium goes completely cashless, I'll have to take a field trip and see how it works on this side. So,
yeah, it'd be interesting because I suspect it's easier for us because we have such widespread use of chip and pin, you know, technology.
Yeah.
Just the tapping it.
Yeah, I doubt it'll be cashless here, but I bet it's an option that a lot of people end up using. So, I would hope anyway.
Right.
Just because I think it would be, it is a lot more efficient, I have found. Like, when I've gone to large events, the places with Apple Pay tend to whip people through the line a lot quicker if you can pay contactless than the ones that are cash. Like, there are sometimes, like, cash lines and then credit card lines just for efficiency's sake.
So, right, exactly. And I think this is the idea behind the stadium, is it's simple, you know, almost it's efficiency. It's yeah. about getting people. Remember, you only have a kind of, it's not like American sports where there's lots of different intervals. There's very clear set periods where people are going to want to use the facilities.
Right.
So you have before the game, and then you have the 50-minute halftime break, and maybe a little bit afterwards. But really, the key is those, the hours before the game, mm-hmm. and the quarter of an hour in the middle.
Yeah, that'll be,
and that's what you've got to get right and make, and that's where right. the clubs make their money, and that's where you have to do things as quickly as possible. And so being cashless and making it more efficient, clearly, it, you know, that should benefit everyone, really.
Yeah, definitely efficiency. I'd like to know how this stacks up to the previous stadium or to other stadiums where maybe there's a mix of cash and chip and pin or something, to see right. kind of what the throughput looks like on something like that. If we can find out, we'll let you know. Thank you, Charlotte, for joining me today to talk to us about going to footy.
Thank you.
And John, thanks for coming by, talking about robots.
Thanks for having me.
It's a lot of fun. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you later. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.